program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yes. So, absurd. absurd story out of Canada. Where else? Yeah, they've got a new prime minister. That's right. And he just came on a visit to the U.S. Yeah, he's a left winger. He's like a younger Bernie Sanders. He's the Obama, right? The Obama of Canada. So they're in for a wild ride. They've opened their arms to in Canada to a whole slew of Syrian refugees, which, if you're following the story, will be the largest influx of refugees to Canada that Canada has ever had in its history. As it so happens, occasionally these reports come in at a very low number. You know, the government says, oh, it's just going to be 8,000 people, and it starts there. And as this program has developed, it looks like they're going to be accepting somewhere in the neighborhood of 25,000 to 30,000 people, and all in a very short period of time. Over 4 months, 5 months. That's an insane. Anyway, that's not what I'm really want to talk about. So apparently, I got to tell you, these refugees are all being routed through this one hotel by the airport in Richmond, British Columbia. So this airport, now mind you, the rooms here, we've researched this. Rooms average 163 a night. It's the number one hotel rated by TripAdvisor for business travelers. And this is the hotel where these Syrian refugees are being housed by the Canadian government. So if you're a taxpayer in Canada, this has really got to chap your hide. But here's the best part of the whole story. On day one of these guys arriving from Syria, these refugees, coincided with another convention at this particular hotel, which is the Vancouver Furry Convention. Now, this was a head scratcher, I'm not going to lie, because I'll be the first to admit, I had no idea that this kind of stuff goes on. And before you think that I'm describing something that is, I'm not making this up. Let me start there. Apparently, grown adults will make for themselves these furry costumes. Robbie, what are they called? Furries? They call themselves furries. This is true. And there's these anthropomorphic characters, basically animal-like humans or animals that have human qualities. And they meet in these people that do this, they meet in these conventions, right? And the truth is there's other people. So this is if you do something like this, don't worry. You no longer have to do this in the privacy of your own home, because there are others like you. And this convention, this particular one in Vancouver, has been growing steadily. I think it started in 2012. So in the last 4 years, it's more than doubled in size. But here's the clincher. So Canadians, right? I mean, you know a Canadian. Everyone knows a Canadian. Jillian Barbary is a Canadian, right? Yeah, she's not one of the nice Canadians, though. You know, she's got some fire to her. But yeah, but most Canadians, right? In the first, you talk to them, and in the first minute of conversation, they're already apologizing for something, which is exactly what would have greeted you if you had signed up for the Vancouver Fur Convention. There, you would be greeted, right, with a little card, and on it, there came a warning. Keep in mind, that the Syrian refugees, right, that they're referring to, will likely not want to interact with you. And then they added that consent is very important to everyone. So I guess Robbie, what they're getting at. So they got all these freaky people in costumes. And the Canadians are, the hotel is embarrassed as hell that they're having these immigrants coming on the government's dime into a hotel at $165 a night. And they're apologizing to whom? They're basically trying to accommodate the refugees at the expense of paying customers who have pre-booked this. I mean, this presumably a convention like this gets booked months in advance, if not a year in advance. And for all the apologies, apparently, I got to tell you, it was pretty warmly received. There were pictures in the news stories I saw of kids greeting the furry costumed people and being very interactive and happy with them. I guess this other warning that they said was that a major concern is that Vancouver wants to make sure that each and every one of the refugees feels welcome and safe, and that this is likely to be a major shock to them. I'll admit, learning of this was a major shock to me, but Robbie, you're going to laugh because, do you ever read a news story and see the headline and you have a reaction as to what you think the story is going to say, and then it turns out to be something completely different. My first reaction when I saw Vancouver Convention, so I had no idea about these furry critter costumes, right? I had no idea about this whole subculture that goes on. Before anybody gets upset, I'm using that term technically, right? It's, yeah, anyway, a segment of culture of people that do this. Well, anyway, I read it and I thought it was some kind of a chest hair convention, right? I thought that it was, men with furry chests were, I thought it was some kind of weird fetish like that. And I thought that the subtext of the story, of course, is that all these Syrian refugees show up to a hairy chest convention. And I'm really glad I clicked on the story because I'll be the first to admit that I stand corrected on this. So this goes on. And besides all of this, isn't it a little bit scary on a serious note that 25,000 people being processed into the country in a 4-month window? I don't know of any private organization funded to the max that can properly vet, screen, and otherwise sift through to make sure that we don't have any bad guys in the mix. This might sound, I understand this is one of the big hotly contested things going on in the presidential debate right now. And well, there are differing opinions on it. We have some good clips. We'll get to that later of from the Democratic debate. Yeah, we got Hillary and Bernie. They've got some strong positions on immigration that might surprise you. But I'll tell you, the crazy thing is, Robbie, can you imagine 25,000 people, 4 months, and Robbie's shaking his head. You can't imagine it, right? And the thing is what government organization do you trust to do this? I mean, is this the same organization that handles your health care, that manages your VA benefits? You know, I don't I mean, the DMV. I mean, what a well-oiled machine that is. So and then where do you how do you even begin to you if 25,000 people show up and submit an application from the far side of the world, speaking a language that most people don't master here, in an area that is a failed nation state at this point, right? A failed nation state. What do you do? There is no way. I'm telling you, there is no way that there are not any bad actors getting through in this group. There's no way. It's just not possible. And you know what? Their welcome to Canada, of course, is being greeted by a bunch of grown men wearing animal costumes. I'll tell you what, if I didn't show up to Canada radicalized, I would be after that welcome. And $163 a night in a hotel. Think about the expenditure. I mean, conservative estimates have this linked it already in, you know, billions of dollars in costs that are associated with bringing in these people. And it's ultimately an interesting thing. You've got to think about it. Does the government owe a greater duty to its own people than it does to the cause of humanity as a whole? Where do you put it? And at some point, a government just has to take care of its own. And that's where a lot of anger is coming from. Back after this, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Still don't know what I was waiting for. And my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets. And every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not...
Hey, Rob, this is good. Furries, according to BuzzFeed, reputable news source, say they aren't a fetish. They're a community. And they're ready to be taken seriously. I think that's a new campaign slogan for Marco Rubio. I don't know. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right. This election, that, what do I always say? I say, don't trust anything that you hear the pundit class talking about. You want to know a fun fact? As of Super Tuesday, guess how much the Trump has spent on his campaign? $1.6 million. Well, you know what? To compare, Bush spent well in excess of $150 million. And, well, and we all know how that turned out. But I think the critical point to be made is that you think of all the people that thrive. Think of the political class that thrives and benefits off of the election cycles that we have. Okay. So from it's not just the campaigns themselves, but it's all the other ancillary providers, service providers, the advertisers. This is a machine. And I have a friend, Robbie. I was telling you about this the other day. I have a friend who is just a low level guy like this, and he's worked for different campaigns, and you wouldn't believe he actually was working for the work on these campaigns starts so early. I mean, we're talking, there are people that were already being boots on the ground getting paid by the Christie campaign 2 years ago. Okay? And so you got to think about this. This is an enormous machine. And it's the same people. It's very incestuous. okay? I mean, the people that run and operate this campaign machinery are recycled. They are recycled, which is why, you know, just this week, I think we had a news story about one of Bush's money guys moving over to the Rubio camp. And more on that in a minute, because to the Cruz camp. And more on that, because this shift that is occurring, these rumblings behind the scenes of movement toward Ted Cruz and a begrudging by the establishment that perhaps Cruz is the candidate to support. Oh, they are hating it. They are hating it. You've got to realize how much Cruz, and I love this, by the way. Don't get me wrong. I love that. Yes. If Cruz has one friend in Congress, it's Mike Lee, senator in Utah, senator from Utah, who is, of course, also a Tea Party darling, and kind of the senator of no. Robbie, is that a fair characterization? Yeah. So senator who just says no to pretty much anything involving any kind of government expenditure, and another, you know, strict constitutionalist. And I think him and Cruz are largely the two lonely kids at the water cooler, but in a good way. I mean, they're obstructionists to the just say yes, just get it done, go along, do anything, say anything Congress that people are so fed up with. So here's the thing. Behind the scenes, there's this reluctant, very reluctant, begrudging coalescence behind Cruz, but it's not happening en masse. Well, you had Carly Fiorina give her speech endorsing Cruz. But you also think about it, how late in the game. Super Tuesday is come and gone, and Trump, yes, it was a good day for him. And we've had other primaries, more good news for Trump. Okay. And now what? I mean, the talk is all these criticisms of who ought to drop out. At every point in the game, the establishment has picked a complete loser. Look, if you're the establishment and you want to win this thing and you want to stop Trump, pick somebody that has some charisma. Pick someone who has some substance. I am sorry. Bush, poor Jeb. We don't talk ill of the departed here, but Jeb, that was not a good go. Is he at a furry convention? No, I don't think so. But he could. Yeah, he's on a cooking show somewhere with his guacamole. I mean, it's just a terribly run campaign, and it begets the question. Where did $150 million go? Because I got to tell you, if you're one of the guys that wrote a $1 million check to put into that piggy bank, you're mad as hell. At least you're probably pretty sore. I said last week, and I stand by it, that you know, Romney almost got up on that stage. He didn't want to be there. But when you run a campaign into the ground and have so much money behind you, those people you owe favors to. Trust me, haven't you ever been in a position where you took money from somebody, they helped you out? Things didn't go maybe as planned. Now, what do you feel? Think about it. What do you feel toward them? Some debt of gratitude, right? You certainly feel like maybe you owe them a favor. And that's what's going on here. You remember, take you back to the beginning of the race, to the beginning of this whole whole season. Cruz was as low than as poor. You know what? I'll tell you what, folks. You know what? I'll tell you what. Cruz was more vilified by the establishment than Trump. There was a point in time, if you rewind the tape and go back to that whole citizenship brouhaha where Trump goes after Cruz because, you know, Cruz potentially claimed he's not eligible to be president because he was born in Canada. Do we know if he was born in Vancouver? Do we have pictures? Yeah, that would be a real question. What Vancouver character would each candidate be and why? Send us your suggestions on Twitter. I'm not kidding. I want to see that. So, yeah, at Sam Nation Show, Twitter, let us know who you would. So, remember this whole Canada thing with Trump and Cruz? And who left Cruz out to dry? Mr. Senate establishment guy, John McCain. And why? I'm going to tell you why. It's very simple. Since the beginning, through, I don't know, about 4 weeks ago, no one in the establishment thought that Trump could win this. And so they never considered him a real threat and applied any kind of breaking power. They assumed that this was always going to be a bubble that would burst. So McCain, who Trump called what? Basically a sissy for getting captured and tortured in Vietnam. I mean, no love lost between those two cats. What does he do? When Trump goes after Cruz, McCain takes Trump's side. McCain says, well, I think there's something there. Which I think most reasonable people agree. I mean, it was just demagoguery. I mean, it was just posturing. Trump was blowing a lot of hot air. And here's the thing that you've got to remember, that McCain is a smart guy. Whatever you think of him, he's a smart guy. And he knew it. But he chose, and this is emblematic of what was going on throughout the race, from the summer to maybe 3-4 weeks ago. That recently, the establishment viewed Cruz as the larger threat. They saw Cruz as the guy that they didn't want to be nominated. And as a consequence, they focused their attention on him, and they coalesced. It was a whatever the flavor of the week was. But I think that obviously Bush was their flavor, their preferred flavor for a long time. And they carried the water for him in a way that, you know, that you can't even imagine. The money that was sunk.
What is this? I mean, this is supposedly good news for democracy
when a candidate who puts in, you know, not $2 million can be leading in an election cycle. And how's he doing it? Well, we all know. I mean, he's just using the media. And that's where we got to talk about this crazy press conference. only in America. Well, yeah, you can get a. So apparently there are still some Trump stakes out there. Although that was a fib. That was a fib. I love this. Okay, more after this. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Welcome back to the program. Sam Rejovsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Imagine you are leaving dinner at an upscale eatery, maybe somewhere, I don't know, Santa Monica, West Hollywood, wherever you may happen to be on a Saturday night, when out of nowhere, a giant person dressed in a furry costume leaps out and bites you in the leg. Oh, what are you laughing at? It can happen, especially if you're at the Vancouver convention. But it could happen anywhere. I'll tell you what you have. You've got a personal injury case. And I don't know if this particular character has insurance, but if they do, that insurance company is not going to treat you fairly. They're not. They're going to take the side of that furry. More than that, they're going to take their own side. They don't want to pay your case. They don't want to give you what's fair, what's right. And that's why you need Sweet James Bergner. Sweet James, the attorney that will fight for your rights. Now, there are a lot of imposters out there. Some of them are wearing costumes, others are not. But one thing you have to remember is when it comes to your case, there's two things. One, the insurance company is never going to be on your side. Forget about it. They care about their profit. They care about saving money. They don't want to pay money on your case because it means less money for them. And two, you've got to find the right person to fight for you. Because you get the wrong lawyer and you might as well not even be represented. It's true. And Sweet James will take care of you. He'll hold your hand through this process and make sure you come out on the other end with as much money as possible, with the right settlement, the fair settlement that you deserve. So please, if you're attacked by a furry, hit by a car, anything, you've got an injury and someone else is responsible for it, make sure that your rights are protected. Call 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. All right. I was really pleased. I don't know about you, but I was really pleased to see in the Democratic debate that we're talking about immigration. I was also really pleased to learn that the number one issue for the American voter right now being, well, I don't know, a porous border, immigration, illegal immigration, border security, security, terrorism. We can play the word association game as long as we want, but basically the wall or no wall, right? We think that's a divisive issue. It's really not. It's polling is the number one thing people care about this election cycle. So all this nonsense about, Trump versus Hillary, Hillary versus Trump, Kasich, Ruby, whatever. Here's the thing. It's going to come down. The big issue in November will be immigration. It will be immigration. And lo and behold, the Democrats are once again tone deaf. Just tone deaf on this issue. Well, don't take my word for it. Wait, let me set this up first. So, all right. Trump said he's going to build a wall. In fact, I'll tell you, in that one debate, I think it was, what was it? Two debates ago, where Trump was confronted with the mean comments by former El Presidente, Vicente Fox, former president of Mexico. And Trump, what did he do? He shrugged his shoulders and said, well, I guess the wall just got 10 feet taller.
So the Trump wall, almost is its own candidate in this election. The elephant in the room. And the Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton and one Bernie Sanders, are asked in this debate, the last debate here, Telemundo, they're asked, what is the difference between the wall that you voted for, and this being some border security measure that was presented in Congress, and the Trump wall? And let's play that tape, Rob.
What is the difference between the wall that you voted for and Donald Trump's wall?
And
it's
this
a big
is Hillary.
Difference. I mean, first of all, as I understand him, he's talking about a very tall wall, right? A beautiful tall wall, the most beautiful tall wall, better than the Great Wall of China.
Yeah, so he's talking about this. Well, she's giving him compliments, but obviously trying to be absurd about it. Now, do we have the next part of the clip? Do we have the continuation of the clip? Can we continue playing that?
Where it was necessary, we did support some fencing. Where it was necessary, we did add Border Patrol agents.
Stop that. So now, okay. Hillary says, oh, the Trump wall, this beautiful, magnificent wall. You know, I tell you, if I was doing an ad for Trump, I'd have this on loop. I'd have her, yeah, I'd have her talking my wall up. Because I think she's selling it really well. But then she goes on, and this is where it tanks. Because Hillary thinks she's talking to Telemundo and to what? To Telemundo's audience, right? But yeah, she's speaking English, right? And this is being carried all, I mean, this clip is being carried on all the major networks, and every American's hearing this. And not just primary voters, but general election voters. And you don't, in this election cycle, talk about a border fence. Folks, I have a fence in my backyard. My fence, any ambulating adult can jump over. Look, unless, I mean, the only person that is not getting over the fence in my backyard, or the fence that Hillary Clinton is talking about, is Stephen Hawking. And I care. He'd probably figure out a way really quickly of getting around that wall anyway. This fence is a joke. This fence is a total joke. It's not serious. You've seen pictures of it, right? Aerial photographs. They'll have a section of a fence, literally a fence. Oh, it's exactly. It's chain link, which means it comes in with built-in handlebars so you can climb over it. That's one thing. The pictures I've seen are this really flimsy corrugated steel barrier that you have families hoisting themselves over. But more importantly, it's built in sections. For crying out loud, it's built in sections. Well, what do you do when there's a fence that's built in a section? You go around it. Okay. And so the immigration, the topic of immigration, just sort of devolved from there. And so the next question that's being asked is talking about. Let's go straight to the clip, Robbie. They're talking about deportation, and this is a big issue right now. Whom do you deport? And Hillary makes a pledge. Listen closely to this.
So you're telling us tonight that if you become president, you won't deport children who are already here?
I will not.
And that you won't deport immigrants who don't have a criminal record?
That's what I'm telling you.
Okay. So, I'm not deporting anchor babies. I'm not deporting any kids. And I'm not deporting anyone who doesn't have a criminal record. Yeah, the obvious question is, didn't coming into the country, shouldn't that get you a criminal record? Like, bam, there you go. There's a law you broke. Now you have a criminal record. Yeah, but that's not what she means. She's serious about the fact that they will not deport anyone that doesn't have a criminal record. So they're basically promising Jorge Ramos that they are only going to be deporting criminal, illegal aliens. Adult, criminal, illegal aliens. This is a non-starter. Trust me on this. This is a non-starter to a majority of general election voters that are out there in this cycle. A non-starter. Well, for what it's worth, Bernie kept up with it too. Do we have that clip? Just really, Bernie chimes in.
And can you promise not to deport immigrants who don't have a criminal record?
I can make that promise.
You know, if Trump was there, he probably would have threatened to deport Jorge Ramos right there on the spot. But here is the thing. Do you remember? So the story about immigration is really absurd when you consider. I'm going to tell you right now something shocking about Obama and his who do you think has deported more illegals? Is it Bush or Obama? Who's deported more illegal aliens? Just stay tuned. We got a lot to talk about. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Come on, some fencing. That's Hillary Clinton's solution to border security. Some fencing. Okay. So the truth is here, the Democrats have a hard time realizing is that, embarrassingly for Bush, Obama actually deported more illegal aliens in I think it was even in his first term, he deported more illegal aliens than Bush did in his two terms combined, which is something that's not often discussed. But here's something interesting. So in 2014, Obama began with his big push, his big saber rattle of executive action on immigration, which is a fancy way of saying, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to grant amnesty by declaration. I'm going to circumvent Congress. I will not wait for Congress to give me the authority. I'm just going to declare the authority through executive order. And it did what? It did what? Well, we know. From 2014 till now, an enormous spike in illegal immigration. Why? Well, you don't have to be Stephen Hawking to figure out why. What is it? Simple. You tell people, I'm not going to prosecute you if you go rob that bank.
Yeah, okay. I guess I'm going to go rob that bank.
It's that simple. Guy, you... So, yes, so Obama, exactly. Obama knew what he was doing. He was opening the floodgates to the country by extending this executive order, but this statement of welcome. If you come here as president of the United States, I will declare you to be safe. And what happened? A flood of people entering the country illegally. Border crossings up. And this problem continues to this day, because the idea, I got to tell you, the idea is if you want to get here, you get in here while the getting's good. Get in here because you know what, politically, you know, we don't have the will to deport everyone. We don't have that. We're not going to do it. America's not going to do it. So the conventional wisdom on the streets in Mexico and other countries south of the border is, man, get in now. They're not going to deport you. Stay long enough. Have a few kids. You're in. There'll be another amnesty. You disagree, Robbie? The beard is twitching. It's an open invitation. It's an open invitation. So here's the thing. There was an immediate immigration uptick as soon as the words came out of Obama's mouth, before any executive order was signed. As soon as the words came out of his mouth. Now, I guess it depends if you think that illegal immigration is a problem or not. And it's a non-starter. I mean, none of what I'm saying really matters to you if you think it's really not a problem. But to the millions and millions and millions of Americans who think it is a problem, to the ranchers on the southern border who are getting kidnapped, who are getting their cattle stolen, who are getting robbed. And this, by the way, it's not that every illegal immigrant that's coming to the country is robbing and stealing and kidnapping. It's that this enormous influx of immigrants is bringing with it a higher percentage of criminal element, right? You have, who do you think is facilitating all this illegal immigration? It's not FedEx, okay? All right? These people are not being overnighted into the country. They're hiring bad dudes to take them across the border. And so what you've got to remember is while this might not necessarily affect you in your suburban quiet home, it's affecting a lot of people out there. And these people are vocal. And it's not just affecting border areas, it's affecting places. I mean, it was an issue in number one issue in New Hampshire to primary voters. Crazy. Illegal immigration. Okay. Where am I? You're asking, where are you going? Well, okay, I know all of that. I know it. Here's the thing. Both Cruz and Trump talking tough on illegal immigration creates perception that this country might not be that hospitable to illegal immigrants should either one of them win the election. In fact, I would argue that Trump's incendiary comments, as crazy as they might seem, are serving, if you are against illegal immigration, are serving a really important purpose, which is they're counterbalancing the very passive welcoming, I think inappropriate language that's coming from Obama. If you tell people, I'm going to build a wall, it's going to be, well, let's quote Hillary here. I'm going to build a beautiful wall, most beautiful wall, like the one they had in China. meaning the Great Wall in China, of China, right? Beautiful tall wall, very tall wall. And you say, I'm going to deport every last illegal immigrant. I mean, who's... I'm not making excuses. You're probably right when you say, I don't think he can do all of that. But what he's doing, in effect, and Cruz, to some extent, is doing it as well, his very hardline position is probably making some people think twice about coming here. It is creating a... It is nibbling away at the welcome mat that Obama and the Obama administration have laid out. And you've got to decide for yourselves if you think that's a good thing. So if you're a Democrat and you're listening to me, and I commend you for that, because I'm glad you're here. But I get it. I get it. You want as many Democrats, you want to create an underclass. And here's the reality. The more illegal immigrants that come in, wages get depressed, they get driven down. And for the most part, the perception among Democrats strategically is more immigration, the better for our party politically. Now, if you're an establishment Republican, you wrote a check to little Marco in the last 90 days. You like it too, because low wages sounds pretty good for your business, doesn't it? How else are you going to staff all those positions and pay them only $12 an hour or less? Minimum wage. How are you going to do it? You don't want higher wages. You understand basic economics. The fewer people out there working, the higher the wage, right? Supply and demand. It's basic econ 101. Well, you also gave money to Rubio, so maybe you don't know what 1+1 are. In fact, after Puerto Rico, he won Puerto Rico. Stunning, stunning success. But I think the day before he won it, he actually said that he was talking about delegate math. Little Marco was talking about delegate math and how the math only gets friendlier for us. I mean, he must be talking about Common Core. This is some kind of funny math that he's referring to the winner take all primaries that are coming up. You know, the one where he's trailing Trump by 20 percentage points. So I don't know what you think of that, but it's not happening for little Marco. It's delusional. You also heard that Trump declared that there's no way, no how he's getting on as a vice president. So in the minutes remaining, I'll tell you, I think the thing about Trump and Cruz is doing it too, but Trump obviously is the one who's stealing the headlines with this. He is framing the immigration debate as a negotiation. So unlike Cruz, he's maybe not a hardcore ideologue, which scares and frightens some primary voters. They prefer an ideologue. They prefer somebody who has held their beliefs for a long time. But Trump, I think, is shrewdly going after this kind of argument of here, I'm going to go full nuclear bore on this. And it in and of itself is shaping he's actually tackling Obama on a policy level even before he's won the primary. It's very powerful. Okay, we're out of time, but we'll have a little more for you. If you download our podcast, we'll have an extra little segment here continuing the show. So if you didn't get your fill, download the podcast. Go to samnation.com and get a little bit more, if you dare. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, on Talk Radio 790 KBC. One of the best little quips at the beginning of the campaign. One of the best little quips was that, you know, I mean, if there is a President Trump, he comes with his own plane. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. A little special extra bonus segment just on our podcast. Thank you for joining us. So, okay. Well, yeah, have you seen pictures of Trump's airplane? Yeah, it's right before he ran for president, sometimes maybe like a year ago, he actually got a new airplane. Do you know about this, Rob? Okay. So he for years had this old 727, which is a narrow body. It's a plane. You've probably flown on one. It's got three engines, but it's an older plane for sure. And so normally these fat cat billionaires, they get some kind of a purpose-built private jet. And that just means it's a jet that is built really to be a private airplane and not necessarily built to be an airliner. And airliners, right, or airplanes that are built for airlines are ones that are not necessarily originally built to be used privately. So Trump buys a 757, which, again, if you've flown anywhere in the U.S. on Delta or United, right, it's a mid-sized, larger airline. It can fly all over the world. It's used to fly to Hawaii. It's used to fly from the East Coast to Europe. And it's a big plane, and so he buys this plane, and he completely guts it, tears everything out, and gilds every last corner and detail of it. I mean, everything's gold and beautiful. I mean, yeah, you can see a tour of this airplane on YouTube somewhere. So when my son and I last week were building his Pinewood Derby car, my son is in Scouts, and... You know what the Pinewood Derby is? You get the Boy Scouts give you these rules for here's a, you know, how can't exceed these dimensions, and you can actually buy a block of wood as a starting thing, and then you've got to unbelievably kids are expected to whittle away at a giant block of wood and turn it into a car, which, you know, there've got to be mangled fingers all across the country of you know, this particular Boy Scout activity going horribly wrong. And so there I was for the first time. I didn't do Boy Scouts as a kid. So here I'm making with Daniel the first Pinewood Derby car of my life. And I'm looking at this block of wood and I'm looking at the directions. We bought this book that tells you how to make the best, the fastest and the best Pinewood Derby car. And yeah, and so I did not whittle away at that wood on my own. No, I took it to a friend who has a saw. That's what I did. I value having all 10 fingers and 10 toes. I consider it a great privilege in life that I was born that way. So, yes, just like Lady Gaga, I have no apologies to make for all 10 fingers. So I kept them all, and we went off to a friend's house and cut it up and sliced it, and then. The best part, of course, for a kid is the painting it part. Taking something and painting it with spray paint. And spray paint is this magical thing for kids, right? It's just out of this world. So we go to Ace Hardware and we and they keep spray paint in Irvine behind lock and key. What the heck are you going to do in Irvine with spray paint? I don't know. There is no chance that the bored Kumon math kids are going to be raiding the spray paint cupboard to tag algebra equations on freeway overpasses. No chance. And yeah, Daniel's favorite color is green, but that's not the color that he chose. Oddly enough, he chose gold. And so this magnificent, or perhaps not so magnificent, car that we fashioned out of a block of wood became a gold car. And so we were on our way to the event, to the race, and Daniel sitting in the front seat. Well, it was before we got in the car, but Daniel says, you know, do we need to put a number on it? I said, no, they give you the number at the race. He says, well, we need something on it. So I suggested, given that it was gold, right, I suggested that we write Trump on it, which he loved. He goes, yes, yes. And I said, now, I'm going to explain something to you. This Cub, this Boy Scouts thing is at a church, Daniel, and folks there are not particularly enamored by Mr. Trump. In fact, this is a Mormon church where a certain Mr. Romney recently opined that Trump, you know, it's Himmler, Hitler, and Trump, you know. So you might get some flack. And that is where my moment as a proud father came in. I'm not going to lie. Daniel loved it. So he's a little instigator. That's what he is. He's a little instigator. And so there he dutifully took a marker, permanent black permanent marker, and emblazoned Trump on either side of the car. And when it was his turn for the great race, the announcer gets up and there's one that it was a Loch Ness Monster. I remember that. And there's one that was red. So he called it the Loch Ness Monster. And he got to the red car. He says, it's like the red speed demon. He's making up names. And then he gets to ours and just gritting his teeth. He goes, oh, Trump, the golden Trump. And so, like that, a star was born. But unlike the real Trump, our car finished. It didn't do as well as we'd hoped. We didn't lose, just didn't win. So, anyway, yeah, he loves everything gold. So this press conference, can we talk about some insanity? First insanity is that the networks carried this press conference. You guys know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. What day was that, Robbie? Was that Thursday? No, it's Tuesday. Tuesday night. He wins, what does he win? He wins Hawaii, and not yet, right? He just won Michigan and Mississippi. Big states. They each carry 59, I think, and 40 delegates, respectively. And on that same night, he was later to win Hawaii, but those delegates, you know, the Hawaiians, first of all, they take a long time, and second of all, they're 3 hours ahead, so, or behind us. What? They're on Hawaii time. So he gets up there and does what? He monopolizes all the major networks are carrying his speech for 45 minutes. Do you understand why this is phenomenal? So we talked about in the show how his campaign spent, you know, $1.6 million so far, or as of Super Tuesday. Do you know what 45 minutes costs on four networks? Do you have any idea? It would be, you add it up, it'd be in the millions. That time. In the millions. So, wrap your heads around it. There he is, and The gist of the beginning is I won, and then it's time to unify. It's time to unify, which is probably right. Probably right. But here's the crazy. Then he's got all these goodies behind him. He's got some stakes and he's got. And it's all to repudiate what Romney made, talked about in his speech and put him down for. It was, yeah, it was an infomercial for all of his stuff. And it seems that he stretched the truth a little bit on those stakes, right? He those stakes really weren't, Trump stakes really are no longer in business. But some of the other products are still around. He still had, and the journalists that were there were gobbling it up, right? I mean, they were taking all the free goodies that they could. And I guess here's the thing. It's Romney's criticism of these failed products. It's not necessarily fair. Trump, a lot of these products weren't Trump's own enterprise. These are products that Trump is lending his name to. So, give you an example. When was the last time that you had a celebrity vodka or seen a celebrity vodka? I mean, it's the thing to do right now. I don't think, does George Clooney have one? Doesn't he have one? Who has one? De Niro. Well, whatever. Yeah, quinoa, magic ingredient. I hate to tell you, but De Niro is not brewing this vodka in his house, okay? He did not hire all the people. He's not managing this enterprise. He's simply, it's a licensing deal. He's putting his name on it, okay? Paul Newman was not making salad dressing, okay? It was a licensing deal. So if the dressing failed, it wouldn't be on him. And that's the absurdity, really, of Romney's criticism. And Trump should have left it there. But instead, he brings all those products up there like a Fuller brush salesman. And I just, it was so cheapening. It was so cheapening. Oh, he could have done without it. Could have just explained to, it could have been a great put down. Mitt, if you knew anything about business, you know how licensing deals work, you retard. But instead, turned it into, yeah, he turned it into a Tupperware party. But the joke's on the media. The joke is on the media. I love it. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC.